The Kinship of Catholics and Jews is a program sponsored by the Institute of Judeo-Christian Studies, Seton Hall University. I'm Father Lawrence Frizzell. I'm the director of the Institute and moderator of this program. With me today is Rabbi Gary Breton Granitor, who has been with us on previous occasions with regard to important meetings between the Jewish community and representatives of the Holy See of the Vatican and other organizations in the church. And so Jewish-Christian relations has been a very important part of Rabbi Breton Granitor's life ministry. And so I'd like to learn from him and share with our listeners something of his academic and background and his work over the decades. So Rabbi Breton Granitor is now the rabbi of the congregation Shirat HaYam in Nantucket in Massachusetts. So I welcome you, Rabbi Breton Granitor.
It's an honor.
And so if we could just tell, give me a little review of your studies as you prepared for the rabbinate, and then how this developed into the variety of tasks that you've taken on in the context of your rabbinical ministry, rabbinical vocation, I would call it.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I want to go back to my undergraduate days. I was one of the early classes of men at Sarah Lawrence College, where I studied music, theater, philosophy, and comparative religion. Those were the main thrust of my studies. And comparative religion was taught by a wonderful professor, Veselin Kesich. And it was a survey course of different religious texts and holy texts. And he was a remarkable person because every time he taught a particular text, you thought that that was his faith, because he taught with such joy and such love and such respect for the text. I later found out that he was Russian Orthodox, but I would not have known that when he was teaching Buddhism or Hinduism or different aspects of Christian life, Judaism. So I studied with him, and I found him to be absolutely fascinating, and I loved all of these different religious texts, wrestling with some of the essential questions about what makes us human and what are our obligations as humans. And so that was always something that kind of stuck with me. So when I went to the Hebrew Union College, obviously, as some people know, at HUC, your first year is spent living in Jerusalem. And Jerusalem is a interfaith advocates playground, because one can experience many faiths in Jerusalem. And I had the opportunity to spend time and learn from the Muslim community, from the Arab Christian community, the various Christians community, the Orthodox community, various Jewish communities. So again, living in Jerusalem was a place where I could explore, and I could find out who I was, because every time I studied a different faith tradition, I was enamored, I was uplifted, I learned things. But every time I came back to studying Judaism, I felt like I had come home. And there was that essential difference. So I knew that Judaism is what spoke to me most, but I also continued my respect for and interest in the various religious communities that I encountered. So when I was at HUC, I continued those studies, especially studies of Judaism and Christianity specifically, under my professor, Rabbi Dr. Martin Cohn, who was a great scholar of Christianity, especially Christianity in Spain. And my rabbinic thesis actually was on a period of time where there were the disputations during the Inquisition. And there was one particular rabbi whose name was Chaste Crescas, who wrote a text called the Bitul Ikare HaNotzrim, Refutation of the Root Principles of the Christians, because he was called to represent the Jewish community in what was a kind of a rigged game show between the Christian leadership and the Jewish community. And he had to explain why the Jews refused to accept Christian principles. And in the end, most people... The loser was killed. He actually was a court Jew. He was respected within the Christian monarchy, and he was able to create this remarkable text. Actually, we don't have a copy of that particular text. It was written in Spanish. The first actual copy of the Bitul Ikare HaNotzrim came from his student Joseph Ben Shemtov, translated into Hebrew approximately 50 years after the events that occurred. That was my rabbinic thesis, was dealing with that, but then looking at every time it reappeared. And interestingly enough, in history, it reappeared in Salonika, it reappeared in Europe, it reappeared actually at the turn of the last century in Kearney, New Jersey. And every time the Bitul Ikare HaNotzrim turned up, there were additional chapters that were added to it, which actually addressed the concerns of the Jews at that time in that place. So to me, this was just fascinating work, was exploring the differences, the discrete differences between religious traditions.
Now, the Hebrew Union College in Cincinnati then was where, after your first year in Jerusalem itself, you came to Cincinnati, I presume?
I came to New York. I was one of the students in New York. And again, New York was a religious person's playground, because pretty much at that time in the early 80s, pretty much every religious institution had a national headquarters in New York. There was a place on Riverside Drive that we used to call the God Box, where all of the Protestant denominations have their national headquarters. And so if you wanted to meet with any religious community, no matter what it was, even the Buddhist community, you wanted to meet with the Japanese Buddhist community, the Rishikoshi Kai was on 40th Street. And, you know, there were all sorts of places that you can go and discover religious folks and people interested in dialogue in New York.
And so I was present when the new building, I think it's on 4th Street.
Yes.
In Manhattan.
Yes, I was the second class of people who were in the 4th Street building.
Oh yes, so yeah. I was there. At the time of the blessing of the building and the inauguration and so on, when Rabbi Orlinsky,
my beloved Bible professor,
yes,
Chava Shalom, yeah. I absolutely adored HMO, as we called him, Harry Orlinsky.
Rabbi Orlinsky was.
I was part of a group of people who created a feshrif for him.
Great
man.
He was a great character, we could say, as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you were one of the early classes then in the new Hebrew Union College in Manhattan.
Right.
After you were ordained, then Were you, did you serve a congregation?
Interestingly enough, I was interviewing for an assistant rabbiship in at a major congregation in New York City. And the night before my final interview, the head of the Reform movement, Alex Schindler, Alav HaShalom, called me and asked me to come and work on the national staff of the Reform movement in the United States and to serve as an assistant regional director in the New York region of the Reform movement, serving with the person who was the regional director, who was also my Talmud professor, Rabbi Dr. Bernard Zlotowitz. And so I got to serve as his assistant, as the assistant director of the what was called then the New York Federation of Reform Synagogues, overseeing 104 synagogues in New York and Southern Connecticut. And in that position, interestingly enough, I really did have some of my earliest professional interfaith experiences, because what was going on in New York in 1984, I started as the assistant director there in 1984 after I was ordained. You'll recall, anybody who's familiar with New York, that was the height of the homeless crisis. In New York. In fact, what was called my senior sermon in my last year of rabbinical school was about the way society treats the homeless because of my encounters with the homeless community. And so early on in as the assistant director of the New York Federation of Reform Synagogues and being centered in New York City, it was apparent that the only people who were responding affirmatively to the homeless crisis was the religious community. So, for example, some of the earliest shelters were opened up in church basements. Some of the earliest feeding programs were done in churches and synagogues in New York City. So I took an active role in trying to advance what we felt was the religious response to the inability of the Koch administration to humanely deal with the homeless crisis in New York. And in doing so, I helped create what was called the Interfaith Assembly on Homelessness and Housing. And I became its first president while I was serving at the Reform Movement. And we would meet at the, every Friday morning, originally at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine. And there were Catholics and Protestants and Buddhists and Muslims and Jews and everybody you could think of would eat Danish from the Hungarian bake shop across the street from the cathedral behind Columbia University. Any Columbia University student knows the Hungarian bake shop. But we would feast on Danishes from there and talk about how we as religious individuals could deal with the homeless crisis. And that was some of my earliest professional work in dialogue, because what we were doing was, yes, we were responding to a human crisis, but what was truly fascinating is what were the religious values that brought you to this issue? And we would speak theology, and we would speak religious traditions, and we would share texts, and we would share, you know, quotations with one another about what was compelling about our faith that allowed us to respond this way. And I absolutely was passionate about that work. And so later on, I had served there as the associate director, and then the assistant director, then the associate director of the region, and then I was asked to take on the role of director of adult education and the associate director of the Commission on Jewish Education, which I did for several years, and then in 1998. I was asked to take over the Department of Interreligious Affairs, which actually had been started by my teacher, Rabbi Balfour Brickner, back in the 70s when ICHKIC was created. Balfour was the first director of interfaith affairs, interreligious affairs, for the Reform Movement nationally. And then he went on from there to become the senior rabbi at Stephen Wise Free Synagogue. And then when he left, Annette Daum, who was a remarkable educator and very dear friend of Sister Rose Thering, so Annette became the second director of interreligious affairs for the Reform Movement. And upon Annette's retirement, I was asked to be the third director. And interestingly enough, following in Balfour Brickner's footsteps, when Balfour left the Department of Interreligious Affairs, he went to Stephen Wise Free Synagogue as a senior rabbi. That many years later, when I left in 1995, I became the senior rabbi at Stephen Wise Free Synagogue. And Stephen Wise Free Synagogue was always known within not just New York City, but nationally as a place that was always on the cusp of social justice issues. So we worked, we had a shelter, we had a food pantry, we had a food program, and we did this in concert with churches and synagogues around the country, and we continue to do dialogue. I established dialogue groups with local churches, with the synagogue, so that we could understand one another better. Mm-hmm. So that fed my passion for this work.
Wonderful, and so that also was part of the way in which you approached your work in the context of Itchkik.
Absolutely,
and so. We've been talking about that the International Jewish
Committee on Interreligious Consultations.
Right.
It sounds like and behaves like a skin disease sometimes. Yeah, putting a group of Jews of disparate backgrounds, throwing them in a room together and locking the door, it behaves like a skin disease sometimes. we are never of one mind.
No, but great things have happened over the decades. And
no question about it.
So that fact of incongruity at times has been challenging, of course, but... out of these dynamics have come a number of very significant developments, obviously. Mm-hmm. So when you review that aspect of your ministry, those details then supplement what I have learned about you from our radio interviews regarding the work of the Jewish community on the international level, mm-hmm. with the Catholic Church, and that started in 1971, of course,
right,
with the Itchkik being founded as that corresponding group for which the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity could enter into dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And that work continues today. I mean, I'm very proud of the fact that the Nantucket Synagogue is very active in interfaith dialogue. I was able to bring my dear friend Father Dennis McManus one summer for a weekend of Catholic-Jewish dialogue where we involved St. Mary's of the Sea. I was the first non-Catholic ever to preach a sermon at St. Mary's. They had to get the bishop's dispensation to allow somebody who was not a Catholic to preach. But I was there, and Dennis preached to my congregation. And the following summer, we brought Imam Antepi from Duke University, representing the Muslim community. And we had dialogue with the Muslim community that exists on Nantucket. And I'm very, very active in the Interfaith Council, which, again, does remarkable work, because there is poverty on Nantucket, there is homelessness, there is hunger, and the interfaith community has been responsible for the food, fuel, and rental assistance program that exists on Nantucket. So I've taken an active role, and my congregation has taken an active role in that work, and so my interfaith work continues, whether it's with the Protestant community, the Christian, the Catholic community, the Muslim community, the Buddhist community. To me, all of this is just, it's a gift.
It's a context in which together we can accomplish much more than if each individual group and faith community is struggling along to maintain itself first, and then to make a contribution to the larger society.
Yeah, if I may, you know, one of the things that I always say is that I'm a firm believer in God's witness in creation, God's part of creation. And clearly in the first chapter of Genesis, where God creates, the last thing God does before God rests is creates humanity, man and woman. And it says that we are created be'etzem Elohim uve'tzelem Elohim, in the likeness and the image of God. And what is that image? That the only image that we can get in that first chapter of Genesis is God as creator. So that means we're supposed to be creators. Well, what is it we're supposed to do? At the end of each day of creation, God says it's good. At the end of creation, God doesn't say, I'm done, I'm finished. God says, it's very good. But then turns to us and says, okay, your turn. And it's up to us to take this world and make it into the world it could and should be. That's our job. And if God, who I believe is behind creation, wanted to make us all alike, I think God could have done it. We could have all been Catholics. We could have all been Jews. We could have all been white. We could have all been whatever. But God didn't create us that way. God created a diversity, and all you need to do is look out of a window and see not one kind of tree, but thousands of kinds of trees, and not one kind of bird, but so many different species of birds. And if we look out on the street, there's not one kind of human being. There's a diversity. So to me, that is a statement that diversity is implicit in the work of creation. And what God wants of us is not that we should all share the same faith or behave the same way or look the same way, but we figure out how we work together to make this world into the world it could and should be without giving up our individuality. It's like a jigsaw puzzle. When you take a jigsaw puzzle, every little piece is colorful and has its own unique shape and identity. The goal of the jigsaw puzzle isn't to take a pair of scissors and cut off all the strange things that come off to the side and make perfect squares so that they line up. It's to figure out how each piece fits into the next piece. And when you do that, when you put all of these different disparate pieces together, each that is individual and colorful, you create something new, something large and beautiful. But when you look at that large and beautiful completed puzzle, not one of those individual pieces of the jigsaw puzzle ever gave up its uniqueness. It remained unique. It had its own unique, colorful pattern, but it just fit together with the one next to it, and the one next to it, and the one next to it, until we created something that was remarkable. And to me, what drives my passion, what drives me, is that through dialogue, through interchange, I don't want to make people believe what I believe. I want everybody to be able to figure out how we can make room for one another and get busy doing the real work of ending hatred and enmity, of leveling the playing field and creating no more poverty, of reaching out to those who are in need and being able to give succor to everybody who needs it. That's our work. That's our goal. That's what I want to do.
Okay. And so the uniqueness of each human being is very well brought out in the tractate Sanhedrin in the Mishnah, when the image is presented that one of the great emperors or kings of the Mediterranean world could make beautiful coins, thousands of coins, each one in the image of the emperor, and each one is alike. Mm-hmm. Exactly like the others. But how much greater is our God? The Mishnah goes on to say, how much greater is our God who creates each of us in the divine image and likeness, but each of us is different.
Exactly.
And so there's room for the uniqueness and then the contribution of each person to the wholeness of creation. And so that's the enormous challenge that you've taken up in a very beautiful way, Rabbi, in terms of your work on so many different levels. And it always, I think things begin locally. Mm-hmm. And then when we see the foundation of an approach, such as you've seen in your early work, again in organizations where there were important leaders, mm-hmm. There were important teachers from whom you benefited, and then you built upon that heritage to share with the wider communities, including the Catholic Church, in terms of the Itchkick meetings, the mm-hmm. great meetings that that you have been involved in organizing, from 1990 in Prague to the meetings in Manhattan in 2001, Buenos Aires in 2004. So on the international level, those important meetings were very good for me to review with you, because you had a unique perspective to share, and I've enjoyed very much that opportunity. And so today you've unpacked some of the background, the foundations of how your work has developed over these decades. So from the mid-1980s then that you began to work on as the interfaith director in regard to the reform movement's outreach to the larger world, you might say, in the footsteps of people like Rabbi Balfour Brickner, mm-hmm. of blessed memory. So to think about the challenges then that you've encountered and the success of the work that you've been doing, we'd say, well, what would you say in terms of just bringing that thrust of your commitment into action? What would you see would be helpful for the younger generation today?
Well, I think dialogue is critically important, because my feeling is that the root, or the taproot of hatred and prejudice, is ignorance. Mm-hmm. And when one looks at things like anti-Semitism, anti-Zionism, sexism, anti-LGBTQ, whatever it is, anything that's anti-something is always rooted in a misunderstanding and misinformation about that community. Anti-Semitism is based upon ignorance. It's not based upon intelligence. So dialogue opens ourselves up to learn about one another, and maybe then we can start to get rid of that taproot of hatred by getting rid of the ignorance that exists between us.
And so, Rabbi, that's I very much appreciate your joining me today for the Kinship of Catholics and Jews, and I wish you great success in continuing the inspiring work that you've been doing over the decades. So thank you very much, Rabbi, and we ask our listeners to be with us again next Sunday at 11 a.m. for the Kinship of Catholics and Jews.